Welcome to the Notes Scene Podcast. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And every week we chronicle the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts. You should please rate and review us. Email us at notescene@gmail.com. This week we will be doing a special retrospective episode on the golden emo year of 2007. Given recent news that Plain White Tee's 07 hit Hey There Delilah is being adapted into a freaking television show. From Infinity on High to The Great Escape, this was a magical year for this scene. Let's dive into some nostalgia. And I saw this, Tyler, but Papa Roach, confirm. New album in the works.
About to send that shit to the top of the charts, man.
Are you stoked?
Top of that active rock charts. Of course, man. It's weird to feel, like, excited about that band again. But if they keep putting out bangers like Help, how could you not be excited?
Papa Roach. Okay, sure. Let's do some listener questions, Tyler. Rain M writes into notescene@gmail.com. Hey, guys. Awesome episode on the story so far. Seeing them this weekend with Take Back Sunday and Coheed, and I'm stoked. I wanted to know your thoughts on Landmarks and if you see them growing. Hashtag support metalcore.
Dude, we're starting something, man.
Thanks for making my commute to work a little easier. Rain. Tyler Sharp, I don't know anything about Landmarks. What's the deal here?
So I have heard this name before. They're from France. They have 93,000 monthly listeners on Spotify. They dropped a song in April called Scars. That starts off with like this, it's almost like a 1975 song, and then it drops into like this, some super heavy, almost like ADD Fry screams, and then they got kind of your typical high off metalcore chorus with some pretty soaring cleans. I don't see enough growth for this band to change the direction of the genre or anything like that, but the few songs that I have listened to from them, I'm interested. You know, it's enough to pique my interest as a fan of heavy music, because it's not formulaic in a way that they're just another metalcore band. They are trying to do something different, so I appreciate that, but I don't see enough movement as far as momentum goes. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Tyler's interested. Thanks, Rain, for writing in. Drew W. writes in a notescene@gmail.com. Any chance you guys will review the new MXPX album? Even if you don't put it on the podcast, I highly recommend you guys check it out. Anyway, I love the podcast. Thanks for helping me discover new music and discover old scene music that I have missed. Keep it up. I'm going to tell you flat out, Drew, we are not reviewing the new MXPX album. Homie, this band was over in 2003.
Oh, man.
You're clinging there.
Oh, man. So, a little fun fact. They recorded a music video for this album. I haven't seen it, but a friend back home texted me that they recorded a music video for one of the singles in a town like 10 minutes away from my hometown in the middle of fucking nowhere, Indiana. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, cool. They dropped a self-titled album. Like, this is supposed to be pretty definitive. I haven't listened to any of it, so I can't comment on it. But yeah,
definitive from MXPX in 2018. But I got it. You know, there's been a little more buzz around this album than the last 10.
Absolutely.
So it's like, I don't know what's going on, but
it's, I think it's because self-titled. It must sound like a throwback or something.
All right. Shouts to Mike. I mean, best of luck. It's not going to sell anything, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, kudos to them for still being able to be a band, you know?
I mean, his podcast matters more than his band at this point.
Ooh, like, man. Hot take.
All right. We thank Drew and Rain for writing into notescene@gmail.com. If you have any questions, feel free to send them in. But Tyler Sharp, we got to move on and dive into some 2007 nostalgia, which was spiked by an unlikely band this week. This story hit, the Plain White Tees 2007 hit, Hey There Delilah, is being developed into a television series. I think it's basically about a musician in a long-term relationship is kind of the idea. This info came per The Hollywood Reporter. And it's funny, Tyler, before we talk about 2000 in general and just what a wonderful year for music it was, I want to kind of just talk story real quick, because we were just talking about this with 21 Pilots and the whole Nico and the Niners and the whole jumpsuit video, and how like a band's album or a band's concept could be turned into a TV show. What do you think of this story in particular?
Oh man. So my boss actually forwarded me the Hollywood Reporter email that they sent out for this story. And I was just like, can't we just let this thing die? Like, we're really running out of that many ideas that we have to turn this song into a fucking TV show. Like, let's move on. It is time. But I don't know, man. Your reaction to it, you felt quite a way about this. I got a lot of text messages from Matt after this news was announced. Just all caps, "Hey there, Delilah." Lyrics and texts about love and whether or not, you know, relationships are worth it.
Like, listen,
he threw me into a whirlwind, and I was like, wait, maybe this is gonna be cool. I don't know.
All right,
I still have some feelings, but let's hear it.
It's a song we all know. Mm-hmm. We all know the story of Delilah and the musician, and 6-part Netflix series that could be kind of fun, short and cute. I'm in. You know what I mean? There's no way I don't watch the Hey There, Delilah Netflix series.
My biggest thing is
30-minute episodes, it's a short thing.
Sure.
It's a story about music, you know, a long-distance relationship, which we can all relate to. New York City to L.A.
My biggest thing is that, like, the song itself, he never even dated Delilah.
I know. We're going to have to, believe me, they're going to retcon that whole thing. I know. The singer came out and ruined it. You know, he never should have told the truth about the song, which is
absolutely not. Yeah, the truth is that it's a bit of a stalker song.
They're
man.
Adapting. They're adapting the song for TV. They're not literally telling the story of real Delilah. It's just
because that should be creepy.
And when we all heard that song, we all had our own Delilah. You know what I mean?
Sure,
we all
for sure.
had that girl
for sure,
and we all applied that song is just basically a simple song about having that girl you're in love with, and maybe she's a little hard to reach, and it's a very relatable feeling, and I think it could be a good show. What's funny though is, like, you know, you got Netflix, right? They're developing like what, 800 shows next year. The need for content is so high and demanding, and this, like, if they do this, this could really open the floodgates.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If this does well, does this open the door for more song-related series?
If you do a series based on just a song, Hey There, Delilah, why wouldn't you do a series based on, you know, a huge album, right? Like Kendrick's To Pimp a Butterfly could be like a whole revolutionary drama series, or like Katy Perry, Dark Horse, the song could be a series, you know what I mean, about a witch. Like, it's just opens
wild,
the,
man.
It opens the floodgates. Like, why haven't we been adapting music into TV? It's something that seems more possible now with the world of Netflix and streaming. And I'm a little tantalized by it.
Are we about to see The Black Parade, the series?
You know...
Oh, he's not feeling that one. He's
that one feels a little played out to me. I just think the MCR stuff in general right now feels a little played out to me.
Oh, absolutely. Saturation point for sure.
But I mean, imagine like a fever you can't sweat out set in the 1920s.
Ooh.
You know, set in like, I don't know, Paris or some shit.
I mean, is this that far off from a Broadway adaptation, you know? Like the Broadway adaptation of American Idiot.
True. It's just that most people don't get to see Broadway.
Exactly.
And all of America has Netflix. And it's just that's all I can say is it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
It's interesting to me that they took concepts of albums and songs and stories and took them to Broadway before TV. Isn't that kind of weird? Maybe backwards?
Well, it's like the model, I guess, just wasn't there yet, right? It's so damn easy to take a concept, throw it out on Netflix, you know, and see if it hit. How many Netflix series do you just never hear of? Because they don't
Right, exactly.
They're just, they have so much money, they're just throwing darts at the wall. And this Hey There, Delilah thing, it's perfect because you have the band that can push it. You have all the music sites that are going to, you know, push it. It has its own promotional machine already built in.
Yeah.
And people are going to check it out, probably. Any other thoughts on this story in particular, Tyler?
I don't think so, man. I'm ready to see the trailer. I don't know if I'm gonna watch it.
Okay, so you pending the trailer, you will watch it.
Yeah, we'll see on that trailer. We'll see.
I'm in blind, but
oh, we know you're in, man.
All right. So, you know, this was the biggest, you know, emo scene hit of 2007. And it's funny because 2007 was such an interesting year for our scene. It was like this amazing transitional year, right? Between 2006, which was the peak of post-hardcore, emo, everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And 2008, which was the crash and neon rising. So, you know, in 2007, you had this weird thing that happened where, like, 06 was such a big year for emo that all this commercial money got dumped into the scene and into all these bands. So 07, you know, especially up until the summer, you really had a lot of big things happening still for emo in 07. It was like all this, like, preloaded money turned on in 2007. And they didn't realize towards the end of 07, like, oh, this shit's over. We gotta scale it back, you know? But right. Hey There, Delilah, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's our scene's only number one hit, right? And that's on Fearless Records. It was in partnership with Hollywood. I can't think of another scene band that has had literally a number one pop top 40 hit.
Yeah. I'm not...
I don't think Fall Out Boy ever got there. I don't think Panic got there.
Well, was Thanks Fall Out Boy's biggest single?
Because,
dude, it got close on the Hot 100.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a number.
But
I know
it never got to number one. Yeah.
It might have been a top 10. I think,
it was definitely
know,
in the top 10.
What's funny is the Plain White Tees, they were a big scene band before this single took off.
Right.
You know, Every Second Counts, you know, came out on Fearless Records and did 39,000 copies first week, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's like they're a legit biggest scene band in contention.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny to think Bob sold Fearless Records for $10 million in, what, was it 2016 when they made that deal?
You short sold the scene, man.
Yeah, it
fucking called the bullshit.
The best business move ever. Before the scene went under, which we see it now in crisis, he sold Fearless Records, which, you know, I wonder how much of the deal, you know, Concord, the major label that bought Fearless, how much they only bought Fearless for the rights to Hey There, Delilah.
Right.
I know. Like, everything's kind of starting to piece together now.
You got to need that back catalog, man.
Yeah. But so there was a lot going on in 07. It starts off really with Girlfriend from Avril Lavigne.
Ooh, man, Best Damn Thing.
Yeah, so Best, you know, and we're not going to get too much into Best Damn Thing because we are still at Avril Lavigne podcast. There are dark forces at work, and we are still. I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's coming. It is a thing. So we're not going to get too into that. But Girlfriend hits number one in May. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That really kicks off the summer. Like, I remember, like school ending, and by, you know, the end of school, summer, that song's number one in May, mm-hmm. and it was just kind of like your first summer anthem of that summer.
It was just that pivot. I know we're not going to talk too much about it, but, like, that pivot really mm-hmm. opened the door for that bright, kind of vibrant neon that emo gave way to. Right? Like, it just, you know, her aesthetic at that time, the pink in the hair, the pink and black, like, skull animals look, right? That was huge. That just took the fuck over in 2007 and 2008. That song, it really was a gateway track for our scene and the mainstream to kind of coalesce together over this thing that was happening.
And it went to number one.
Right.
You know, and that was how we kicked off our summer of 07, was with Avril Lavigne at number one. And it was kind of foreshadowing for what's to come. Because, you know, next, I mean, Fall Out Boy dropped Infinity on High. This Ain't a Scene, Beat It, Thanks for the Memories. I mean, that's a huge thing at that time.
Biggest emo first week of all time. What was it, 256?
I think it was 260,000 copies first
260?
Week.
260? Okay.
Yeah. And you're right. It was the biggest emo debut of all time. It went on to sell over a million copies.
One night stand. I remember when that song dropped. I was in, God, I think I was in sixth or seventh grade. I can't remember. But I didn't have, you know, I didn't have a CD player. I didn't have an iPod. I didn't have anything. But I had a friend who had an iPod, and his sister would put all these songs on it.
Yo, I had a girlfriend who had an iPod, and that was the hookup, right? Before,
dude,
I got my own.
When dude, you had that, like, that's how you chose your friends back
but
then.
But yeah, before you had your own iPod, like, oh my God, if you had an iPod, you had a clout, man. Like,
dude. Dude, you have people around you all the time. Mm-hmm. But he'd let me listen to his iPod all the time, and I would just crank Thanks for the Memories, man. I would just crank that song so hard. It wasn't life-changing, but, like, that was a big moment for me.
It was just crazy to hear Fall Out Boy. We already heard them with, you know, Sugar, dominate alt radio, but they were on pop. They were pop stars for the first time. And even, like, you know, this ain't a scene. Like, hearing that hit, it was just like, oh.
Has there ever been a better follow-up?
I am an arms dealer. You know what I mean? Right? It was just like, holy. And just, they were just like a pop titan. And
has there ever been a better scene follow-up?
Like, I think
from Corktree to Infinity, like
from rock to pop. You know, they made the perfect rock to pop transition, I'd say.
But it was you could still consider it as rock. Like, it still appeased those core fans. You know, because you had fame over infamy.
At the time, there were some, you know, there was
always backlash, for sure.
There's
always
been a period of backlash. Yeah. There's always, you know, half of the fans.
Totally.
But Thanks for the Memories, man. I just remember hearing it on radio every 5 minutes. I've been happier because Fall Out Boy was, you know, one of my OG favorite bands going back to Chicago's for 2 years ago. Like, I was like, you know, that's my band.
It was, what a time.
I just had so many memories just in my car. It's sunny, mm-hmm. It's summer, and what's on every 5 minutes? It's Thanks for the Memories.
That Beat It cover, dude. Oh, dude.
Crazy.
Yeah. I remember that.
Oh, my God.
That was
that
wild.
Beat It cover, crazy radio plays. So, Check Yes, Julia, out of nowhere. Right?
Yep.
Us scene kids, we didn't know who We the Kings were. Right?
Nope, we had no idea, man.
We had no idea who they were. And the record, you know, they didn't sell records, really. But damn, did that single cook.
That took off like no other, you know? It was kind of weird to see that take off alongside The Great Escape. And we've had this conversation on the show before between the two songs. But just the music video, because it was on, you know, every 20 minutes on Fuse, VH1, MTV2. You couldn't escape it. But just like the aesthetic, Travis's hair, house party, sneaking out, that was summer, man. That was summer for every kid in that era.
Run, baby, run.
It was so encapsulating. And then you had like the biggest chorus of all time, right?
Run, baby, run.
So wild. I mean, just capturing such a mentality, right, of youth in that one song.
I remember, God, I must have been young high school, going to the tanning salon with my girlfriend and sitting in the lobby while she tanned. And, you know, they had like AMP top 40 hit radio playing.
Totally.
And it was like, you know, it was like Demi Lovato, you know, Chris Brown. And then out of nowhere, Check Yes, Juliet comes on in
that riff
radio. And
right?
I'm like,
that riff.
I'm like, my first thought was, is this All Time Low? Like, who the fuck is this? You know what I mean? I'm like, who is this? And then I go look them up. And I'm like, We the King. I've never heard of this band. Who are they? Came out of nowhere.
Absolutely.
And,
out of nowhere.
They left their mark.
Did you know that, fun fact, did you know that they originally wanted to call the band Check Yes, Juliet?
That would have been a better band name.
I mean, I don't know, but we might have not gotten that song.
name the song after your band.
Name the song We the Kings?
Yeah.
Yeah, that story's on the archives of Alt Press, if anyone wants to go dig that up.
All right, Tyler, I'm going to need you to just, like, take a breath for a minute, okay?
All right.
Inhale, exhale.
Right on. Hit me with it, man.
Did you inhale and exhale?
Nostalgia,
right,
gut punch.
Say this sooner. Mm. I have a parentheses in my notes. Entire pod episode? ?
Yes.
On
please.
That song.
Please. Oh my goodness. What a moment.
Here's my thing, Todd. Do we need to explain? You know, it's been so long, and maybe our listeners aren't so familiar with Under Oath and Aaron. Do we need to explain this band? Do you need to give the rundown, you think?
I mean, we could do a quick hit and run here. So when Under Oath was recording Define the Great Line, Aaron finished his drum parts, and he would go into another part of the studio and work on this solo record. We didn't know what, you know, diehard Under Oath fans knew Aaron was working on something. We didn't know if it was going to be heavy. We didn't know if it was going to be, like, emo. There was a few demos that got dropped on MySpace, which are completely wiped from the internet now, and I'm pretty pissed. So if anyone out there has those, send those to notetoscene@gmail.com. I will love you forever. But yeah,
shouts
so he,
to all the contraband we get in that email
oh,
inbox,
absolutely.
By the way. Shouts
you
to all you
rule.
Pirates out there.
Absolutely. So he records his drum parts for the Final Great Line. Then he goes and works on this record, and he finishes it, and he announces that it's called The Almost. The record's called Southern Weather. It's got this very like striking cover art, right? And it's got like a fucking awesome logo. It was like this A with a circle around it, and then it had like The Almost in the background of it. Really cool. I remember going out and buying the record day of, just because I was an Under Oath fan. I didn't really know what to expect, because I still didn't have internet at the time. But there was a point where the Say This Sooner music video, once that song dropped and it was getting a full push, you couldn't turn on MTV2 and not see it once within an hour.
What a great video too, where he points the mic at the camera and what gives that look. It's just like swag.
He just nailed his look so well during it's that cycle. I mean,
so much swag.
The straightened hair, you know, like it where it's parted, and
the he's nose got ring.
The nose ring, and I think he had a lip ring at one point too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, lip. It's just the swag was crazy. So that was one of the biggest rock radio singles of 2007, and especially in the summer, it just was dominating. So much that the band ended up on Jimmy Kimmel Live playing it, which was so cool to see.
Yo, if anyone has that, that has also been wiped from the internet.
I know, and I had that too. I'm so sorry.
You had it on a major sketchy virus-laden website.
Jimmy Kimmel, why are you trying to hide this stuff? You know, listen, you put these great bands on your show, and we want to find their performances. You know, all the classics you can find on YouTube, Brand New, Take Back Sunday. By the way, listeners, I recommend, if you haven't, do the Jimmy Kimmel emo dive. He's had so many great... Just look up your favorite emo band of Jimmy Kimmel. You'll find good stuff.
Matt has a list on Alt Press if you want to Google that. It's pretty comprehensive, and I found a lot of performances for the first time through that list. That was my first
article I ran at AP when I started.
It's so comprehensive.
I came in with a splash, man.
That was fire.
I was like, this needs to be documented. What were the first week sales of this record?
All right. So the first week sales, this did 29,000 copies, which is insane.
It's insane,
right?
Because it was so unknown. Like, so many people didn't know about it. And he's just Aaron, and there's no big promotional machine around it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that came from the radio.
It absolutely did, dude. Having Say This Sooner burn.
I would be in the car, man, and I'd be listening to, it was called 8NX was our station, and 8NX, you know, and those drums kick in, and I would just crank the radio, and that riff just shreds your car in half, right? Like, and then all of a sudden you're doing 20 miles over the speed limit, and you know what I'm saying? It's just like, oh my God, what a great single.
Just the penultimate summer song, man. It just captured such a moment. So that, right, it debuted at number 39. Sold 29,000 copies in his first week. I mean, just that stat right there. You sell 29,000 copies and you debut at number 39.
Red Jumpsuit Apparatus. Coming off of Face Down, which was a 2006 hit, they hit back again with Your Guardian Angel.
The ballad.
And they hit hard. I mean, that was every AOL AIM stat away status.
It like, rode so well.
Everybody had that in their AOL instant messenger status. I mean, Your Guardian Angel. And that music video is so classic. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Those dudes just look really good in that video. You know what I mean? I say that as a straight man. Like, they're just like really pretty dudes in that video.
The hair was
they're just
so
well dressed and groomed, and the hair and the guitars
the look
expensive
so well.
And nice. And that song, I think it was on that song was on the Hills too. And
I guarantee the
Laguna Beach spinoff.
And the
band
it.
Were actually on the Hills. They made an appearance. They were, you know, Alkaline Trio.
That makes sense.
Shouts to you, Matt Skiba. You weren't the only one.
I feel like Red Jumpsuit 2007 belonged more on the Hills than Alkaline Trio did.
Yeah, they came on the Hills because, I don't know, Lauren on the Hills worked at some fashion magazine and they were doing a shoot with the band. And the joke was, oh, stay away from these guys. You know, they'll try to screw anything that moves, you know,
oh,
so be careful.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was funny. So Don't Fake It, that record in this year goes gold.
Just in 2007?
Yeah. It goes gold.
Fucking
wild,
man.
Big success, man. And now it's platinum.
Man. I was having this conversation with a friend yesterday because, like, you know, the red jumpsuit apparatus are still playing, like, fucking, you know, you could have them play at your birthday party for, like, $50, man.
They're out there at the carnivals.
Yeah. It's just incredible to look back at this band and see what it once was and how fast it fell with one bad record. I want to know the people who ruined this band.
I know it's.
I need to sit those people down. Well, it was absolutely Capitol, but there were meetings.
Video of them, you know, shooting up the Capitol Records office.
Right. Yeah, I know.
One of their later records, which would not fly today, but yeah.
Right.
They did this band. This band and Capitol, as Capitol was falling apart, making terrible mistakes like dropping from first to last and all this stuff, they totally screwed over Red Jumpsuit. I mean, that sophomore record, that's a later year, so let's not get into that.
But, no need to talk about that.
As this is all happening, Miley Cyrus blows up with See You Again.
Ooh.
And I gotta say, at the time, Say This Sooner, Face Down, Check Yes Juliet, See You Again is right in the mix for me.
Absolutely,
as a rock
dude.
Song, I'm like, God, this girl can fucking... I'm like, dude, this song cooks.
Absolutely. I mean, that song is undeniable. Right? It's undeniable. And, like, I'll even go back before that. Seven Things fucking rules, man.
Seven Things was actually after. It was the lead single from the album Breakout, but See You Again was kind of came out before on, like, this EP sort of thing. Yeah, See You Again was, like, her introduction as, like, Miley in No More Hannah Montana. And,
interesting.
It was all over, man. It was great before we got See You Again. But, yeah, what a good song.
Again, capturing an era, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like that song is so, it's so Breathe Carolina, which that band ended up covering that song. But
it's like rock, though. I mean, she's got that slamming rock guitar,
totally, for sure.
But also the techno beat.
Yep.
And it's a little bit of a cheesy song, but in a good way.
Totally. But it's almost like it was like a foretelling of what was to come. For the scene,
I got my sight set on you. I just remember my first time hearing it, and I didn't know it was her. And I thought, I was like, this is a cool song by a cool female-fronted rock band. And then when I looked up and saw it was Miley Cyrus, I had to, like, go sit down for a sec. Because I thought I was cool listening to As I Lay Dying and shit, you know?
I had to go sit down.
I had to, like, reckon with the fact that I liked the Miley song. Okay.
Dude, I did the same thing, man.
Real quick. Okay, so Tokyo Hotel... happened. I know. Lost in
dude, you are going back, man. You are going, like, fucking back.
This is when they happened with Ready, Set, Go. They right? play the VMAs and somehow get really big with MCR fans.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that shit?
It's kind of like the initial attractiveness to Black Veil Brides. You know,
yeah.
It's just like that fashion, I think. Ew. It was.
Ew. They were kind of, you're right. They were like a BVB... precursor that we fought off. Like,
yeah, we tried. We ended up winning, but there was a time where it was like, this is gonna happen, and it's happening big, man.
But, like, they never got on any of the important tours. They never got that MCR opening slot,
right,
you know,
that they needed. Yeah,
we kept
for sure.
I feel like we, like, the scene, we all, like, united, and we're like, no.
No,
like,
this band is not
We all
happening.
Locked arms. We're like, guy's not coming in here. I don't like his hair.
That scream. I kind of liked his hair, man. It confused me, but I was very interested by it.
They were trying to make him, like, a Jared Leto, Gerard Way, Sonny Moore. They tried to put him up on that level, and he was on that level.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, Universal was trying with that one, man.
Sure.
That was that Scream album. What was that song? Monsoon. Oh my god, man. That was their that was their ballad.
We dodged.
Try to be hit kind of thing.
We dodged a bullet there.
We dodged a bullet.
All right, 2007 still. Chiodos have Lexington burning on rock radio.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Bone Palace selling 40,000 copies first week. And this is, they have been upstreamed from Equal Vision Records to Warner Brothers Records, a major label. And it's huge because All's Well That Ends Well was huge. It had sold over 300,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd opened for Linkin Park on, I want to say, the Project Revolution tour, which, like, hey, that was a thing. Remember that?
Oh my God, dude. Right? MCR and Linkin Park, like, greatest tour of all time.
It's just crazy. I might have told this story on the podcast before, but they shot the Undertaker's Thirst for Revenge video not far from my high school, and you know, everybody all day was like, are you going to the video? Are you going to the video? Because they invited everyone. They put a thing up there, MySpace. We're shooting the Undertaker video.
It's public.
It's free show. Yep. Everybody can come. And, dude, I had text messages from people I didn't even know. You know, just blank numbers. Just like, you going to the video? You going to the video? Here's where we're meeting. My whole high school, everyone, nobody learned that day. Everyone was just texting about going to the Chiodo shoot. And I didn't go.
And I hung out with my girlfriend instead.
And I will forever regret it because I didn't get to see Nick Martin jump out on the stage and scream.
Dude.
And everybody looked dumbfounded. Like, who is this guy?
Who's this guy? You could have been a part of scene history, man.
Yeah.
It's all right. We've all been there.
Speaking of, you know, Equal Vision, Circus Survive drop on Letting Go this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it does 27,000 copies first week.
So this was what everyone said was their sellout album when it happened.
27,000 copies first week.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, Equal Vision, powerhouse label right now.
Yeah.
Can you imagine having Craig Owen and Anthony Green on your label in 2007 at the same time? How do you fuck that up?
And you get dual AP covers. You remember that?
Right. Right.
You remember that?
Classic AP cover.
Oh my goodness, man. It's one that was the first AP issue I ever got.
Yeah.
And I bought both covers. Mm-hmm. That was when Anthony was doing his first solo record and Craig was doing his kind of
cinematic
whatever.
Yeah,
it was
Sunrise.
Cinematic Sunrise, and he was like teasing Isles and Glaciers, like some massive kind of super group project.
He was just a star. He didn't even need a reason.
He could do
to
whatever.
Be on the cover.
Yeah, he could do whatever.
They were
he
those
wanted.
Two. They were two stars.
Absolutely.
So through that same Warner Upstream deal that Equal Vision had, Circus Survive will get upstream to Atlantic, which is owned by Warner Music, and that's where their next record comes out. Blue Sky Noise, right?
Oh shit. Okay, that was the sellout record that everyone said it was. On Letting Go is a classic. Yeah, for sure. I love Blue Sky Noise, man. That's my favorite Circa record.
Oh, that first single?
Get Out.
Oh, so good.
Man,
fuck it,
dude.
Fuck with that. That's we're leaving 2007, but you should go cop that.
Hell yeah.
The Spill Canvas. Like,
ooh,
they're out there doing stuff. They're doing
ooh,
stuff. Right?
What's the song?
Is it God,
I'm not over you.
I'm not over you. It's Bone. Is it called Bones? Like, I want to feel you in my bones tonight.
Oh, dude. Yeah, when he hits hard, and it's almost like that Taking Back Sunday moment.
So they're on a major label. I think they're on Sire or Reprise, which is just Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out there. But it just, I don't think
all
it ever really.
All over you. Not over you. All
not
over you.
Okay. Yep. I just don't think it ever really happens for them.
They just commercially never
go anywhere.
But they almost, man.
Yeah.
It almost happened.
They were in the conversation. Do you remember Polygraph Now, that song?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Fate is an elegant, cold-hearted whore.
Mm-hmm.
She loves salting my wounds.
Ooh.
She enjoys nothing more.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tie you to something in your room just so I can question you. Darling, don't you lie to me. It's basically a song about being cheated on and wanting to interrogate your girlfriend, which I don't know. I don't know if that song flies today.
I don't think it's safe today, man.
The Click Five.
Oh my God,
listen,
man.
Though,
you are throwing out some names here.
Make their exit this year.
Yes.
With a bow. This is kind of their exit. They're not really mattering. Because Just a Girl was their biggest hit, and that was in like 2004, I want to say. 2003 maybe. 2004, 2005.
2005.
Yeah, so Just a Girl was a hit, but by 07, like, they put out a record, but it's kind of like, see ya, guys.
It's, oh my God, dude, I am convinced that song never, that band never actually had a good song, but they had the look, dude. That album cover for Modern Minds and Pastimes, the 2007 album, it's just like a promo of them, and they look like they are the next biggest scene band.
Just the Girl I'm Looking For is Ear Candy.
I mean,
she's bittersweet.
Think
she knocks me off my feet.
Oh, I don't think it's
I think
that good,
it was featured
man.
In like a few movies. Cause
oh,
it's just...
I'm sure.
Okay. The Starting Line have their first radio hit.
Yo.
With Island.
Yo. My favorite Starting Line song. I don't care what anyone says.
Interesting time for the band because they're on their second major label. They went from Geffen to... They started at Drive-Thru. They went to Geffen. And now for this third record, they're on Virgin Records. And they have success with the single island, and that's the last we ever hear of the starting line.
It's just over from there
it's
on
over.
Out.
It is over. It makes no sense. This band just makes no sense. And maybe Virgin's connection to Capitol Records, because Capitol was falling apart at the time, is why the starting line sort of get dragged down, because Virgin also fell apart. But man, that was it. You know, they had a hit single. It was like, whoa, starting line are going to be huge. Nope, gone.
Yeah, no, it was a crazy time. I remember when Island dropped, and I was just like, what a song, man.
It's great. It was a great
what
summer
a
anthem.
Song. And I love the album artwork for that whole mm-hmm. cycle, but
like very airy, very
I
summery.
Felt, yeah, yeah. I felt like the rest of the album kind of didn't deliver enough.
No.
You know, they had one song kind of.
It was a strong single. The music video is weird for that single. Have you ever seen it?
I think so.
It's
I think
like
so back in the day.
It's like a cloudy video. They're on a beach. It doesn't really make much sense.
Yeah, I don't really like the way what's the singer's name?
Kenny Vasoli.
Kenny, I don't really like the way he looks there.
Yeah, I know. He had some.
He kind of like lost all of his emo ties.
Had some questionable look choices.
Yeah, a little bit.
So, Bird and the Worm hits radio.
Man,
hits radio in a post Panic at the Disco world. You know, all of a sudden you have the Used with like little chiming instruments,
little Baroque elements.
Yeah, little Baroque elements, and that was interesting. I remember hearing that premiere on radio in 07.
Now, did that come? I remember that too. That was right around the time we got cable back home. And that music video played fucking forever. And I think I used to have nightmares about it. Getting sucked into a couch. I think I used to have nightmares about that. Did they push that single before Pretty Handsome Awkward?
Yes, that was
okay.
The lead.
Okay, that was the lead. Right. Gotcha. Yeah, I love that song, man. I think Liars is highly underrated Used album.
Lies for the Liars by the Used. It sells 92,000 copies first week in 07. About the same as In Love and Death did, 94K, and I want to say like 04 or 05. But the guyliner era of emo is over.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're not growing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really one of the first signs, you know?
Yeah.
They've just sold slightly less than their last record when really they should be.
Right.
They should be exploding.
Yeah.
But this is kind of one of your first signs, is that this record, I think this record, I don't know, it barely goes gold. Like maybe it limps to gold. I don't even know if it's gold. Like
I don't
it just
either.
It for what it had the singles, but it, you know, it, overall, it's just people were moving on from this brand of post-hardcore.
Yeah, and it was so unfortunate to see. And then they go and fucking drop Blood on My Hands a couple
on,
years later.
Just, we'll talk about that on the 2009.
Yeah,
podcast.
The 2009 episode. Right.
Good Charlotte bite hard on emo here and pay for it dearly with their first commercial flop. Dance Floor Anthem being like the only real success out of this period.
I mean, I fucked with The River hard, man. And I feel like people remember the River really well. More so than that lead single.
So if you look at their history, Young and Hopeless went triple platinum. 3 million copies.
Mm-hmm.
Chronicles sold 1 million copies.
Mm-hmm.
Good Morning Revival doesn't even go gold in 07.
I totally...
It's not
yep.
even gold yet.
I see it, man.
It's so wild. They bit... Like, they left their pop punky, and they just bit too hard on that emo, and it just didn't work for them.
Yeah.
As emo was ending, they were like,
right,
they went full in.
They doubled down when everyone was getting out.
And that's an interesting point here. It's like, this is a time, 2007, like, 2003 core is going to kind of try to strike back with some cores and some albums, and you're going to see them fail. Like, Thursday, Thrice,
Oof.
Dashboard, Confessional, Save the Day, Stray Light Run, Alkaline Trio, Funeral for a Friend, Static Lullaby, Hawthorne Heights. Post-hardcore will start to rust here.
Yes.
You're going to really start to see it. These bands just... They just lost it, and a lot of them lost a lot of clout in 07.
Totally. So who's the biggest scene band in 07? Is it Under Oath?
Maybe.
Coming off a 98,000 first week?
I mean, if we're not counting the mainstreamers, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, non-breakouts, bands that aren't getting top 40 radio play.
Yeah, possibly.
I think,
Sonny,
you know,
Sonny left from First to Last in 2007.
Right, true.
That was the biggest story of the year, probably.
Yup. After the Seos and beef, after the Atreyu beef, Mm-hmm. Sonny was like, I'm out. I'm mm-hmm. going to make music on my laptop.
Vocal cord problems. He left that year, and it was devastating as a fan. It was the big, it was just the thing you never would imagine happening, but it did.
So, what, like, could you compare it to something of recent? Because, like, I didn't live through that the way you did. What shock? Was it really, like...
Because it was, like, if there was one band, if there was one band where the singer was obviously the most important part.
Right.
It was from first to last. Sonny Moore was a god. He was the most mm-hmm. famous person in the scene at the time.
For sure.
Like, he was cooler than Gerard Way. He was cooler than Pete Wentz. People worshipped him in a way I hadn't seen before. Like, it was just people just screamed Sonny at every show. Mm-hmm. It was devastating when he left, especially if you were invested in that band.
For the more the modern day scene kids, was mm-hmm. It was bigger than Danny leaving Asking?
It would be bigger than Ollie leaving Bring Me.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, bigger than that. Bigger. I mean, yeah.
Crazy.
As crazy, bigger. And I'd say from first to last at that time mattered more than Bring Me do it this time. And it's like, you know, they were the post-hardcore band at that time, and Sonny left. It's just crazy. So, meanwhile, on Warped Tour, 07, there is one buzz band everyone in the industry was talking about, all the fans are talking about, everyone's talking about on MySpace, everyone's posting YouTube videos of. Do you know what band this is, Tyler Sharp? They were just tearing up Warped Tour.
All-time low, right?
No.
No?
Take one more guess.
Is it a pop punk band?
No.
It's not a pop punk band.
They were the buzz band of this Warped Tour.
Oh, man.
They really are the definitive, like, we blew up on Warped band.
Was it Bring Me?
Nope.
All right. Who was it?
A little band called Bless the Fall.
Oh, my goodness. I would have never got it.
Craig was jumping off stages, jumping off everything. They were crazy. Ahenia, their music video blew up on YouTube.
Yep.
And Guys Like You was the biggest, like, screamo moment in, like, a year. You know what I mean? It was just, like, this thing. And they were so huge. They were having such a hot run. His Last Walk was a phenomenon.
It was truly unreal. I remember going out to Best Buy and buying that record and putting it on for the first time and listening to Message to the Unknown. You know, like, that's the first song that kicks off the record. And then you go then you go through times like these and Wait for Tomorrow. Like, come on, that mm-hmm. could have been like an alt-rock radio song, man. It just felt so diverse and so fucking pyrotechnic. Like you didn't know what was coming next. It was just violent sounding.
It was like that middle ground of post-hardcore metalcore, but exciting, and this friction between the two, and it was like, wow.
You never really heard it that way before.
You heard Guys Like You, and you were just like, this is new.
The double bass chug pattern with that lead riff over it at the beginning, where it's iconic now, you know, but like back then it was like, what is this, man? Like, you didn't know what you were hearing.
Got to give a shout to Greeley Estates for bringing up Bless the Fall from Arizona and science records scene.
Always. So, caveat emptor, man.
Oh, absolutely. Dude, y'all with the Vampire Squad, shouts.
We out here. Shouts to science records.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. You know, we're not sure.
Maybe some shady financial practices. I don't like the way it ended, but they had a good thing going. Uh-huh. So Craig leaves the band in late 2007. Craig Mabbitt, the singer. He leaves in 07. And that's the other biggest story of 2007.
But not
Sonny
before they
leaves
drop.
From first to last.
Right,
and,
right.
Craig leaves Bless the Fall.
But not before they drop. I wouldn't quit if everyone quit.
That, because they needed a Warped Tour band.
Fucking fire,
they were just slain,
man.
Song. If you remember this, I'm going to be impressed because you don't need to remember this. The Confession. Do you remember this band?
They were on Science, right?
Produced by M Shadows.
Yep.
On Warped Tour that year.
Mm-hmm.
You can see funny YouTube video of drunk or high Ronnie Radke crashing their Warped Tour set and jumping on their stage and fucking shit up for them.
Of course.
If you want to look that up.
Of course.
But, you know, they were like billed as this Avenged Sevenfold, the next Avenged Sevenfold.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting all the opportunities they didn't deserve. They got to open for Avenge. And they got to open for Bullet for My Valentine, like at peak Bullet, you know.
Was that record called like Requiem or something?
Requiem, exactly.
Yep, that's it, dude.
It was very controversial because people were like, these guys are frauds. You know what I mean?
These guys are frauds.
They were just trying to be the next Avenged Sevenfold. And M Shadows was just trying to create another way for him to make more money.
That was a wild time. Yeah, because when I bought his last walk, Science Records had put a little like handout inlet next to the lyric booklet of their upcoming releases, and it had Greeley's debut full length, another band that I can't remember, and The Confession was on top.
For that, they were on Warner with Avenged too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I know they released. I think like, it was like an EP in 05.
Okay. I think they moved them to Science on purpose to make it look more legit, organic. Because people were like, "This is a fraud. You're defrauding us with this band."
Right.
Megan Dia play Warped Tour this summer in 2007.
Megan Dia.
Monster is happening.
Dude, that song. Oh man, I need to go listen to that song. What a hit! What a hit! How did that get any radio play? I don't know any. How far up did it get?
No radio play. It was a YouTube hit, you know, for sure.
Definitely.
And it was people knew it. Like even non emo scene people somehow found that song. It just made its way around the internet. And the remix helped. There's some weird remix that went around.
Yep, that's a high up there on Spotify.
Yeah, it just got around. Yeah, Megan Dia playing Warped Tour. What could have been?
Yeah, they were like the emo version of I Set to Kill, you know, like there you had those two that were kind of operating in the same wavelength at the same time.
Twins? The Frampton,
I think so. Girls, yeah, right? I think so.
Dia and Meg Frampton.
Yep.
And one of them did The Voice eventually, right? Or American Idol or some shit.
Yeah, one of them went on a singing contest. I forgot about that.
Shit. Yeah, I think it was The Voice. I think Dia Frampton went on The Voice.
Wow.
I think she's still putting out solo shit, too. Maybe we should...
I mean, props to her. Yeah, maybe we should cop that.
We should. Okay, Taste of Chaos, 2007.
Man.
The Used, 30 Seconds to Mars, Seosin, Senses Fail, Aiden, and Chiodos.
Man, you want to talk about a lineup right there.
I remember that was a big fucking deal.
Did
like
you
when
go?
I came to town, I honestly can't remember. I either did go or I went to something very similar to this.
Okay.
Bill. Because I have memories of seeing Senses Fail and The Used in the same venue. I just can't fucking... God, so long ago, man.
Dude, they do blur together after a while.
I've been to Taste of Chaos. I don't know if this is the one I went to.
Okay, gotcha.
Interesting. Next year's Taste of Chaos. Listen to this. Avenged Sevenfold, Atreyu, Bullet for My Valentine.
Dude.
That's like the full heater,
dude,
right?
Fashion core, man. The revival. That's
like,
what they should have called
all,
it.
Like peak commercially, you know, Atreyu have gone full sellout with lead sales. You know, Bullet are becoming the biggest band in the world.
Totally.
Guess who the openers were?
It Dies Today.
Nope. Less the Fall.
Oh shit. Okay.
Fronted by screamer Jared.
Jared. Yep.
The new singer Bo Boken hadn't joined the band yet.
So they played
after Craig left.
They played for a good 8 months in 2008 without an official frontman.
It was just Jared fronting doing the screams and I think like Eric doing the cleans.
I think there's video that I watched on YouTube not that long ago of them playing Bamboozle that year with Jared only on vocals and it's fucking wild. They had some guests come up.
That was a saving grace. I mean, getting that Taste of Chaos when you lose your singer.
Totally.
And getting to go out on one of the biggest tours of the year and, you know, really win over some fans. That really helped the band, you know, stay relevant long enough to when they got Bo. Okay, Paramore. Misery Business runs the summer.
Absolutely.
You got Crush, 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 and that's what you get. Keep It Burning.
Dude.
I mean, this might be the biggest story of 07.
I think so, man. You could not escape that band. I mean, MTV2 was just pushing it down viewers' throats. I remember going out and buying that record. And I remember initially being disappointed with, like, the meat of the record. But I just played Misery Business on repeat for 3 months.
Didn't matter.
The whole summer. It was just the most undeniable thing I had ever heard. And I ended up getting my first drum kit that fall, and that was the first song I tried to learn how to play.
That was another car radio jam.
Oh,
like it was just,
dude.
You know what I mean? Always the whole summer.
Windows down, screaming
Windows
that
down.
Shit, man.
And your girlfriend liked it too, which is cool. You know
right,
what I mean? Like
right?
It was like it was cool because there were no screaming. It was a girl. It was empowering.
But it was still heavy, was man. Like
yeah.
it hit hard. Hit that
so,
snare.
Riot is a smash success. It opened at 40,000 copies sold first week, but it goes on to sell over 2 million copies. They'll hit hard next with Decode as Twilight takes over the fucking planet. Paramore make a big entrance and are here to stay.
They definitely cemented themselves, for sure. And then, we got Decode. Dark hair Haley. Love red.
Dark hair Haley. That was one of my favorite looks.
That was a look.
And then, it was good because it was fall when she did it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We went from summer orange to fall maroon.
And then Brand New Eyes with Ignorance, man. And it was like, holy shit, are Paramore a heavy band?
And she had that blonde hair
in the video.
Brick video.
Oh, man.
Me and my friends, like five of us dudes, just sat on a couch and we were like, who is this angel?
What a time.
So Amberlynn dropped Cities. This
dude,
year.
All right, I'll just come a out and favorite. Say it. The best Amberlynn album. The best Amberlynn album.
You're not alone there. That is the consensus, which is funny because that doesn't have the hits, but as the full package, is that the best Amberlynn album?
I say hands down. I don't think there's anything that comes close to... Yeah. Dude, Godspeed.
People fuck with Cities. People really fuck with Cities.
The Unwinding Cable Car. It's one of the best acoustic songs I've ever heard. There's No Mathematics and Love and Loss. Hello Alone. Reclusion. Inevitable. Oh my God, dude. I need to go listen to this record.
I was tuned out. I don't know if this is one of those records that mattered later on, but I was just... Because in a couple years, they're going to have their big hit with Feel Good Drag, right?
Which is hilarious because that song, they've re-recorded it from their second album.
But
right?
That's going to be a smash for them.
Because
so,
they got updrafted to Universal after Cities dropped on Tooth and Nail.
Yeah. So just interesting because I don't know, was Cities overlooked in 07 and maybe appreciated more later? Or do you remember, like,
no, dude, the hype was real. Okay. All of my friends were like, holy shit, this record's incredible. Okay. Because, like, that's coming off of Paper Thin Him on Friendship Personal.
That was my smoke. I wanted all that smoke. Like, that was my
record. I mean, that was the fire, but I felt like they delivered really well on Cities.
Somehow I tuned out, but, so...
Great band. Real quick sidebar. Stefan tweeted a picture of all their members recently.
That reunion is inevitable. They broke up just to have a reunion. That's like, you know what I'm saying?
It's inevitable,
man. For doing it. You know, yeah, that's the move.
You know, they're out there.
Break up so you can reunite. I mean, because that initial news story of Amberlynn reunite is going to get 2,000 shares on Facebook.
Absolutely,
you know?
Man. Absolutely. Okay.
Here's where we get very, very early All Time Low. And I want to say it wasn't until, like, December, like, when Dear Maria really started cooking, like, late 07.
So, yeah. So, I didn't hear Dear Maria until I bought the Warped Tour 2008 compilation
in
May or whenever that dropped. That was when I got
on. But I remember late 07, like, the talks were starting.
That's when it
and
started.
And that YouTube video was getting passed around in Dear Maria. Was just, I mean, you had to listen to it, right? There's a song called Dear Maria, Count Me In. How can you not?
How can you not? With that album artwork and those colors,
and All Time Low. We overlook it now, but that's a great band name.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Man. Absolutely.
It's just a catchy band name.
Shouts to those Newfound Glory lyrics.
I think about this in Dear Maria, Hey There Delilah. What's the big lesson here? Like, putting the girl's real name in the song will make it a massive hit, right?
That's the formula. That's part of the puzzle,
Maria,
man.
We got Maria. We got Jamie from Jamie All Over. Delilah from Hey There, Delilah. Emily from First to Last. It's like if you put...
Juliet
from Check Yes, Juliet. If you put the girl's name in the song title, it's going to be a hit.
Hey,
dude,
Brittany.
How about a show...
Hey, Brittany from the Six Kids.
Right? How about a show starring those four girls? Maria, Jamie, Delilah, and Emily. And we'll call it The Girls of Summer.
The Girls of Summer. Wow. Matt's coming out here with these grade A content ideas. He's just coming in hot.
Yeah, it's this, man.
Dude, so funny. Because we've shat on 2007 so much throughout the course of this show.
Well, it was just, you know, it was the year everything was ending.
Everything
and
changed.
It was
sad. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
I said, transitional year, but we got some good things that happened. But like, yeah, it's just funny to think about all the hit songs with the girl's name in it. And,
absolutely, man. Absolutely.
I thought a little bit about this, and bear with me, please.
All right. I'll hear you out.
I thought about each of these girls, and like what they'd be like based on the song. And I came up with, here's what I came up with, okay?
Oh my God.
Maria from Dear Maria. She is a flirt who hangs out at too many coffee shops.
Oh no, he did it.
Has bangs, probably black hair. A cool chick, funny, but with an annoying laugh.
No.
Over 4,000 MySpace friends.
Oh.
Eventually becomes a hairstylist.
Oh my God.
Okay. Jamie from Jamie Oliver.
Uh-huh.
Jamie is your high school summer romance. Total tease. Sun-kissed brown hair and freckles.
And freckles.
He wears overalls and rompers unironically.
Oh my God.
She loves hanging out at the park at night. You always drive her car instead of your shitty one because she doesn't appreciate the brand new Jeep Liberty her parents bought her.
Oh my God.
I have in my notes on Jamie's 2006 Jeep Liberty, fire stock sound system, yo. And great AC.
Great AC. That's
color,
a plus.
Color, dark red.
Wow. Wow.
Delilah. Delilah is rich East Coaster. Comes from a good family. Father is a West Point general. Mother is in politics. She's in college as a liberal arts major, but plans on going to law school. Wears a lot of summer dresses. Doesn't wear any makeup, unaware of how pretty she is. Emily, dramatic goth who breaks your heart.
Oh, no. Just, I feel like this one's personal, Matt.
Made black lipstick look hot.
There you go.
She has six other boyfriends you don't know about.
Oh, my God. This is personal.
Makes you feel like it's your fault somehow.
Oh, no.
It's 2018, and you're still not over her.
And you're still not over. Oh, my goodness. Matt, Emily, are you trying to tell us something?
Emily also becomes a hairstylist and works at the same salon as Maria for a few years, though the two never become close friends. And that's my note on the women of emo.
Oh, no. So now you all know what Matt did this weekend.
Haste the Day will briefly become the biggest.
Right.
They will briefly become the biggest thing in metalcore this year.
Dude, I didn't think we were ever gonna throw it back to Haste the Day. So this was my band, man.
This is the year when they
pressure the hinges.
Full stop, Haste the Day. And rightfully so. Like, they're underrated.
Oh, dude, when it comes to metalcore, props to this band, man. Never got the attention, the reception that they deserved, for sure. But if you've never listened to Haste the Day before, go bump Stitches right now. It'll blow your mind. That song's incredible, and it's much more of a post-hardcore song than it is a metalcore song, but I fuck with all of Pressure the Hinges and even their earlier albums for sure. But yeah, dude, I remember hearing that, going out and buying Pressure in 2007 and hearing Stitches on the special edition DVD. That was the menu song that played, and I watched that before I listened to the album, and I was like, what is that song? Oh my
God. That album,
God,
too,
man.
Where it's like white with like a
with the albatross on it.
Or, yeah.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Dude,
this was their
moment,
right?
Yeah, dude, because they had just gotten their new vocalist. They had kicked Jimmy out. I think Jimmy started a band called Trenches, and then they got Steven in there.
Then this guy had more of like an Atreyu scream.
Yes, absolutely, man. Whereas the last guy was very
high.
He was very high and very distinguishable. Like, you knew it was a Haste the Day scream. But this one was more.
Yeah, dude, shouts to the Long Way Down.
Oh, my Goo Goo Dolls cover, man. Yeah. Dude, on When Everything Falls. Oh, how classic is that? It's so good. But yeah, thank you, man. Thanks for bringing Haste the Day to Note to Scene. I love that band.
Interesting this year. One Republic debut Apologize.
Fucking
man,
fire, man.
That shit was huge.
That Timbaland's remix, man.
Yeah.
It was funny to see how they immediately just remixed it with Timbaland and released that on the album and pushed that as the single instead of the original song.
Yeah, shit was huge.
Fucking
do you remember Still Remains?
Oh, absolutely, man. So I saw Haste the Day's reunion show.
Uh-huh.
They played a 15-year show or a 10-year show for Burning Bridges back in 2004, and Still Remains opened.
This is the year they have 2007. They have their little moment as like metalcore's bright hope. They were like seen as innovators. Everybody's writing about them as innovators. Like
the Serpent album, man.
You think about like Worst Is Yet to Come, White Walls, Wax Walls, like all those songs. Like
yeah.
they had a lot of buzz, but it just kind of
that record was great.
Yeah. Interesting little band that is, I feel like, been forgotten to history.
Absolutely.
All right, in my notes, I just have this down. January 2007, she watched the Sky EP.
Oh, man.
January 2007.
Oh, my God. Drown the fucking city. Do you remember the first time you saw that music video?
Literally. I mean, vividly.
Vividly,
I was sitting
man.
In my chair, my black office chair at the office in our house on the old, you know, big CRT monitor computer. And I couldn't believe it. Jordan Blake was God. He had the perfect look. That video was so cool with the all the lights in the background. What are they at, like a fucking airport? You know, it's like,
oh,
and that song. Oh my God. It was just, wow. That
when those
EP,
clean, when it comes in so hard and then those cleans come in, you're like, dude,
we are talking about a Skylight Drive, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Who is unaware, like, this band used to be really cool.
Go cop that demo of Drown the City. That
dude, can
snare
I drop
on
a
it.
Bomb on that, yo?
Oh,
like,
my gosh,
shouts
man.
Shouts to ASD. Shouts to JB.
The artwork? Get the fuck out of here, man.
Oh, my God.
Did they start having the
they
girl
did.
On the cover?
They started, let's have a distressed girl on the cover. They totally started.
Because they just did it again for Wires and the Concept of Breathing. And then Bring
and
Me
then
did,
bring
it
me,
with
bring me did it
Suicide
with
Season.
Suicide Season. And there's been more people, too.
Oh, like, there's been so many more. I Am Ghost. You remember
yep.
that shit?
And Ronnie, you know.
Yeah,
Escape the Fate.
Get the
and
fuck
and
out
Fall
of here.
Universe.
Yo.
So now you're screaming at the top of your lungs.
Oh, dude, does that just
chills,
if that doesn't just open the floodgates of memories for you? I'm so sorry.
Dude, I do you remember it as vividly as I do? Like seeing that video first
absolutely,
time?
Man. Like I wanted to be that. I wanted to be one of those guys. They had the best fucking look, and these songs were so good, man. Drown the City, All Star Diaries, Hey Nightmare, According to Columbus. Like what a closer, right. man. The hook melody in that song is just, it's still incredible.
Yellow Card will stage a comeback with Paper Walls. 40,000 copies first week.
Got the fans
down
back
from,
on board.
Down from Lights and Sounds, which did 95,000 copies first week, which was also way down from Ocean Avenue, which was a smash. Were you into this?
I was not. I was checked out on Yellow Card at this point, man.
I could give a fuck, but it, I just felt like it was worth noting. It did happen, and it did matter to Yellow Card fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I had friends who were about it. At least you had. I'm happy you guys were able to have that moment later on in Yellow Card's career.
Shots to you guys. Shots to Yellow Card fans. You deserved it.
Sure.
The plot to bomb the Panhandle.
Ooh.
So somewhere in this little scene, there's a small band called A Day to Remember who drop an album this year called For Those Who Have a Heart. And they are totally off my radar this year. They're not a cool band yet. Like, they're not considered one of the cool ones.
They became cool when Victory reissued this with the Since You've Been Gone cover in 2008. Yeah. That's when it fucking started to pop off for A Day to Remember, because they released Homesick in 2009. But yeah, it was if you were fucking with A Day to Remember in 2007, you were early. You were early for sure.
Definitely. At this time, I remember kind of just looking at them going, ugh, like, you know, what a stupid name. But who knew what they were going to become?
Dude,
you know what I mean?
I was about it once I heard it. It just took me forever to get there.
Did
Since You've Been Gone launch the metalcore cover revolution?
Totally.
Was that the launch?
They did it first. And they picked the best song to do it. I mean, that's, you know.
The greatest song of all time.
The best rock song ever made. I mean, shouts to Kelly. But my most anticipated album of this year, can you guess what it was?
Was it Chiodos? Was it Enter Shikari?
No. Good guess, though.
Okay. All right. Angels?
Nope. It was Silverstein. Arrivals and Departures. Because you got
to
think,
that was
this
supposed
year,
to be some fire.
They're coming off. So When Broken Is Easily Fixed sold massively for them. Discovering the Waterfront sold over 30,000 copies first week and had huge singles. I was so hyped. But this was their first, you know, major disappointment for me as a band.
For sure.
And both, I think commercially it was a disappointment. It sold only 27,000 copies first week, which was down from Discovering the Waterfront.
Yeah, I don't think you were alone in feeling feeling burnt by this record.
And I felt a little burnt.
Are you about to go to that 15-year anniversary tour that Seosin just announced for their first record?
Seosin?
Or my bad, Silverstein.
I don't know, man.
Silverstein, Hawthorne, As Cities Burn. I'm going to lose my mind.
It's a good lineup. I've seen all that shit played so much already. I don't know if I need to go again. Okay. After 06 was such a huge year for emo, like we talk about, you know, 06 was the commercial peak, right? Black Parade. Mm-hmm. You had this huge, like, mainstream injection of money into emo, which we've seen play out in 07. And it burns bright and then fizzles out by 08. Right. When it's officially fucking dead. Like, 08, it's just no more money. There's no more scene. But it plays out in this interesting way. So Transformers is the biggest movie of 2007, right?
Hell yeah, it was.
Transformers, the soundtrack, is huge. Mm-hmm. And here are some of the bands featured on that soundtrack.
Hell yeah.
Goo Goo Dolls, The Used, Him. Taking Back Sunday, Armor for Sleep.
Oh, hell yeah.
And for The Used, Pretty Handsome Awkward is actually used in the film when Bumblebee fights that police car Decepticon.
Yep.
The riff that police car says, instead of to protect and serve, the car says, like, to conquer and enslave.
Yep.
That riff kicks in right when they fight. Mm-hmm. The Used were huge. Oh, my God.
So fucking massive, man. What a soundtrack. You remember when Lincoln, it was the first new music we had since Minute to Midnight, New Divide?
Mm-hmm.
That was the first Linkin Park.
You're thinking of, New Divide was for Revenge of the Fallen. You're thinking of What I've Done.
Oh, shit. You're totally right. Yep, that was the second Transformers movie, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Got you.
That Linkin Park, it worked so well in 07. They had
goodness. They had to make them write a song for... Oh, man. The Michael Bay Linkin Park
jokes. We won't even get into what Linkin Park did this year. You know, if you want to, you can go listen to our Chester Bennington tribute.
For sure.
We dive way deep into Minutes to Midnight if you are interested. So,
hell yeah.
Boys Like Girls blow up with The Great Escape and Hero Heroine and Thunder. Fuck, man, I love this album.
It's a classic. This is a scene classic, hands down. It made young teenagers feel like the summer was theirs with whoever you were in a relationship with, you know, like it just made you feel, I don't know, like this record made me feel a way in seventh grade.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like a hero.
They're right. Yeah.
So good. Oh, it's such a good record. It went gold, 500,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Definitely one of the biggest moments, you know, of 07 for the scene.
Oh, absolutely. It was Great Escape. Like, dude, how could you not just blast that whenever you're driving around with your friends or skating in a parking lot? Or, like, that song made you feel like you could take over the world on those late summer nights, man.
It made you feel like you could conquer the world. And I know we've had the debate, like, Check Yes, Juliet or The Great Escape, you mentioned earlier. I'm kind of like right now, I'm kind of feeling Great Escape.
Great Escape.
You know, it's like weird, like, right? Like, after listening to
it's
this record.
It's a mood. Yeah, it's
a mood.
For
this episode, I was like, man, that record was fucking fire. Like,
absolutely.
Driving around with my girlfriend, you know, like, it was so good. Tyler, you have any stuff you want to add, or do you want me to intro us out?
This was the beginning for me, 2007. It was a very pivotal time in my life, so I'm very appreciative of everything that went on throughout those years, because if it wasn't for 2007 and 2008, as crazy as it sounds, like, I wouldn't be who I am today without those years and that exposure to those bands. So shouts to the scene.
What a ride. We did this, you know, our Warped 08 episode retrospective, and I'd say by far that was our fan favorite episode.
We've gotten
the most fans who were like, yo, that was so awesome.
That was tight.
So
yeah,
hope you guys, you know, enjoyed looking back at 07, because it was, you know, it could be a forgotten year, but wow, what a fire year it was.
What a time, man.
For emo.
Absolutely.
Well, that is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions, email them to notescene@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, please take the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5 stars, and we will love you. Peace out.